When our Lord says that he was not willing to take up their cross and carry it, is not worthy of him, or he who loves father or mother or anyone for that matter more than him is not worthy of him. We read this text on the memorial of Saints John Fisher and Thomas More, and remember how just before he was executed, the last words that he spoke to the crowd present ring down through the centuries in this spirit of our Lord's command and exhortation: I am the King's good servant, but God's first. We have to choose God before everything else in this world. And for that reason, our Lord said, I have come to bring the sword. Last year, I was in Canterbury, the great city of Thomas Becket, and it was rumored by some while we were visiting the great cathedral that the head of Thomas More was somewhere in the town. So we went searching through the town and asking questions, and it led us to a little church called St. Dunstan's that goes back to the time of the Reformation. Apparently it was a church attended by the Roper family, and after the death of Thomas More, Margaret, his daughter, and his son-in-law, John Roper, went back to Canterbury and lived for a time at least. And it is said that after Thomas More's head was taken down from the London Bridge, from the gate of the city, that it was given to, or she took it, Margaret took it and kept it with her. And reputedly it was buried somewhere in this church, in the crypt that belonged to the Roper family. The contention is disputed, but anyway, we went to this little church, and we eventually found the marker that is directly over the place where reputedly the head of John the Baptist is, head of Thomas More is laid. And it's an Anglican church. And the church is decorated with images and stained glass of St. Thomas More. And some of the artifacts or some of the decoration has been donated by Catholic churches from around the world that are dedicated to St. Thomas More. And in fact, on the stone or on the inscription over the place of burial, it says, may the English church be free. There's even a banner of Thomas More in this church which says, quotes the last words of Thomas More: I am the King's good servant, but God's first. And of course, it was very ironic standing in this Anglican church in which there's no Blessed Sacrament and the Mass is no longer celebrated, at least not validly. And the acknowledgement of this great saint by those who have not followed in his footsteps. But really, that can apply to probably most of us. Most of us look to St. Thomas, and saints like him, St. John Fisher, recognize their heroism and realize that we fall short. And we see that this man was great because he was willing to stand above the crowd and give himself entirely for God and his neighbor without counting the cost. And in a particular way, Thomas More is a great man of prayer and action, a great ideal for men of this day. His desire was to serve God with all of his heart. He thought about being a Carthusian and at one time an observant Franciscan, but he chose to take up a career as a lawyer, and of course he was a just and honest lawyer and judge eventually among many who were very corrupt and willing to take bribes and to declare the innocent guilty and the guilty innocent. He absolutely refused to do so. He was a man of penance. He wore a hair shirt most of his life. He served the mass. Even when he was chancellor of the realm, he used to get up early and go to mass and serve the priest's mass. People thought he was not acting according to his dignity, but he insisted that he was, that it was his greatest dignity to be able to serve at the altar, even as chancellor of the realm. He was also, you know, in a good sense, a man of the world. He was well read and educated, spoke fluently Latin and Greek. He was a friend of the great humanist Erasmus, and Erasmus thought he was one of the greatest and most intelligent men alive. He, you know, practiced law and raised a family and did all the things that he needed to do of the world, but he also built himself a hermitage on his property and would spend one day out of the week in silence and prayer and penance. You know, he was really an ideal Catholic man, and ultimately his discipline of living a life of prayer and of action led him to stand in the breach when the world around him was crumbling and everyone was signing their life, literally signing their life away on the king's oath of supremacy, which was basically a denial of the faith. He refused to do so and ultimately costed him his life, as it did St. John Fisher. So in this age, which is even more cynical than ever before and scoffs at the good deeds of the saints, we need to have a great idealism and a great desire to serve God as St. Thomas More did, and recognize that we can only do that if we invest ourselves in our prayer and in the works of mercy, if we beg our Lord on bended knee that we might have the strength in the final hour to choose to serve God rather than men, to be just and honorable to all around us, but to choose God first and to take up that sword that our Lord spoke about when we are set against the prince of this world and those who serve him. We have one king and one goal, and no matter what our vocation is or what tasks are given to us to accomplish, that almost must always be before our eyes. And if we keep it there, we will achieve the goal and find the same rest and peace of the saints, of St. John Fisher and St. Thomas More.
Miserere.